the matter of Roe versus Mazel 30 LLC. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon. Defendants Mazel 30 and 40 and Associates, Richard J.
Good afternoon, counsel. Mr. Blanco, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. This matter is fairly straightforward. I think I could be brief and then hopefully address any questions the court may have for me. I did not reserve an opening. I would, however, like to reserve a brief few minutes for rebuttal.
That's
if
fine.
I may. The matter comes before the court from a grant of summary judgment by the trial level and affirmance by the appellate division. And the issue before the court is what the standard of care is or what standard of care is owed by a possessor of land to a police officer when he enters upon the premises. The issue arises as a result of the abrogation of the firefighter's rule. That was done by statute, and it was explained by the Ruiz decision of this court. And stated more specifically, the Ruiz decision made clear that the firefighter's rule is no longer the law in New Jersey. But the case did not go on to say what the standard of care should be in these circumstances. And that's the gap that we have and what brings us here today. The appellate division below determined that it was unnecessary to decide whether the plaintiff in this case should be afforded the status of a licensee or an invitee, that it, regardless of the status, that even if we afford the plaintiff the higher level, that of an invitee, and I'd like to quote the appellate division. The appellate division concluded that the plaintiff's foreknowledge of this obviously dangerous condition should relieve defendants of potential liability. That was the conclusion of the appellate division. And so the main point I want to make before this court is that that decision was for the jury. And I should say that the appellate division relied to a large extent on the restatement, specifically section 343A. That section of the restatement establishes that a possessor of land is not liable to invitees for the failure to warn of obvious dangers. And again, my main point is that whether a danger is obvious is for a jury. That's why we have juries. It's not for the trial judge to be looking at photographs or for the appellate division to be looking at photographs of the condition. It's not for this court to be looking at photographs of this condition. We have juries to look at photographs. And I want to reemphasize that the restatement provides no basis to take that question, the question of obviousness, away from a jury.
I want to be sure I understand what you're saying. Are you saying it's a jury can question whether the stairs were in a dangerous condition, or are you saying it's a jury question as to whether the plaintiff had knowledge of that condition?
Well, both those issues are for the jury. Once there's a duty, once we agree that there's a duty, whatever that duty is, once there's a duty, invariably the case goes to the jury. It's the very rare case that should not go to the jury once we agree that there's a duty. And I don't think there's a dispute here that the duty exists. We're dealing with a possessor of land. The possessor of land has a duty even to trespassers. So the duty exists.
So what is it?
Well, that's the question for the court.
Well, that's the question I'm asking of you, so you can help us decide that issue.
Maybe we should... To answer that question, maybe I should explain what the trial court did. The trial court, relying on the Seller case, concluded that the plaintiff should be afforded the status of a licensee. And that was in Seller. That case was decided before Rosa. Now, I think as the court is aware, for a long time, Justice Handler embarked upon a battle of trying to eliminate these status categories and having a general overall duty. And so I'm somewhat hesitant to embark upon a battle that Justice Handler waged and lost. And the one of the
well,
second...
He didn't completely lose it, but because there are some areas that don't fit neatly into invitee, licensee, or trespasser, and therefore the Hopkins analysis is helpful in determining in certain cases whether or not a duty exists.
This case is a perfect example of that.
Okay.
You could argue trespasser, licensee, invitee. There's reasons to argue either of those categories.
What is your position?
My position is that he should be treated as an invitee, but more importantly, we may have come to the point where we should erase those terms from our vocabulary. This may be the case to do that. We still have those terms. I'm not sure they help.
But the terms are important for this purpose. They set different standards on the landowner.
Yes.
So, for instance, as you know, a licensee, a social guest, the landowner has to advise of defects that the landowner knows of or should know of through reasonable diligence, correct?
Yes.
And for a business invitee, now you've got to look for latent defects. So these classifications actually make a difference. Are you suggesting a one-size-fits-all now?
I think the state of the law should evolve in that direction. Many jurisdictions have erased those terms from their vocabulary, especially California is one example. But the main point I want to make is even if we give them the lower standard of the Seller case, it should have gone to the jury. If we give them the status of a licensee, it should have gone to the jury. Seller went to the jury.
Yeah, I'm trying to, if we are, you're suggesting that we somehow erase the distinctions between business invitee, social guest, and trespasser. If we took up your invitation, okay, what's the standard? Give it to me.
I think you could have a standard of care that says a owner of land has to use reasonable care to protect people who enter that land. And reasonable care can include the foreseeability of someone coming upon the land in the manner in which the plaintiff did.
Does that include latent defects?
It depends on the circumstances. I think under that standard, it would depend, a jury would be permitted to consider the circumstances under which the plaintiff is coming on the premises.
Yeah. And how would you charge them? Then you're gonna start going back to, is he a business guest, is he a social guest?
I don't think we need to, but regardless of that, if the court finds to take that path, the path that Justice Handler for a long time advised, if the court declines to do that, my position is even under the Seller case, the case goes to the jury. The Seller case is a well-reasoned case, and it was decided before Rosa. Under Rosa, I'd be barred. My client would be barred under the firefighter's rule. Rosa criticized the Seller case. Essentially, Rosa overruled Seller. I should also explain that Justice Handler, in his dissent in Rosa, mentioned Seller favorably. So the question arises, well, is now Seller sort of revived? Does it come back to life? If that is the case, if Seller is the standard, then this case goes to the jury. The facts of Seller are very similar to the facts here. And that case went to the jury. And I think that's my major point. In other words, I think a remand is warranted even if the court chooses to maintain the status categories that we have presently.
Is your position that the homeowner knew or should have known about the Safe Block Initiative and therefore knew or should have known that a police officer would be checking on even aborted residents, and therefore the homeowner should have done something to protect the police officer from defects that he knew or should have known of?
Absolutely. In this particular case, there was actual evidence that the property owner was aware that police officers were coming in to the property to check on the safety of the property. There was an actual fine imposed on the property owner for a violation previously. There's evidence that the owner was actually aware of that potential. And the major point is, the major point I want to make is that it's for the jury to decide whether the property owner could have anticipated that the plaintiff would come onto the premises as he did. That's not for the judge to decide. So under any scenario, the case should have gone to the jury. It doesn't mean my client wins, but it's a jury question. There could be no doubt about that. Once there's a duty, invariably, it's a jury question.
Is there anything you'd like to add to your argument?
I think that's all I have, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hull?
Thank you, Justice Roberts. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Before I begin, the defendant had reserved an opening statement, but given the time, the defendant is willing to withdraw its right to an opening statement, so please feel free to interrupt me.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
My adversary just spoke about a revivification of the Sella decision. The Sella decision has never been overturned. The Sella decision was not affected by the Ruiz decision because the Ruiz decision dealt exclusively with the fireman's rule and the applicability of the fireman's rule after the passage of NJSA 2A62A-21. The Sella decision had nothing to do with the fireman's rule, so that the decision in Ruiz didn't affect the Sella decision whatsoever. The Sella decision has never been overturned. It has remained viable. It has remained the law of the state. It is not affected by the death of the fireman's rule. It is not affected by the Ruiz decision. Additionally, the appellant doesn't raise any reason or rationale to depart from Judge Dreyer's sound and well-reasoned duty determinant with respect to emergency responders or unannounced police presence on private property. There is nothing in the record by which the plaintiff suggests that another standard be implemented other than that set forth in Sella. Moreover, Judge Dreyer's decision
How do you read Sella? What do you think the duty analysis of Sella is?
The duty analysis in Sella is very simple. Where there is an unexpected official responder on the property possessor's premises, in an area where the general public is not expected to be, then there is a limited duty of care akin to a licensee.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it's going to get the plaintiff to a jury.
Mm-hmm. No, it does not, Your Honor.
Because the plaintiff is arguing there's a factual dispute as to whether his client knew about the defect. That's number one. And number two, then there's the question of whether or not the owner of the building knew or should have known about the defect. Why doesn't that go to the jury?
Well, the defect issue does not go to the jury because it's a view of the photographs of this step established that it was an open and obvious defective condition. The stairs were dilapidated. They were falling apart.
So why weren't there cones around it? And remember, this is December at 4 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, we're in December now. It gets pretty dark. What might be obvious in the clear light of day isn't so obvious in dusk. And when, you know, steps or concrete gives way, that may not be so clear to the open eye.
Well, Your Honor, it was obvious to this plaintiff because he had been on the premises on a previous occasion. He had seen those steps in the daylight, and he testified at his deposition that the steps were in the same condition on the date that he fell that they were on a previous condition when he saw them in the daylight.
But he said they had the same appearance. Because he didn't actually walk down the steps the first time, did he?
I believe he did, Your Honor. I believe he said that the first time he walked down the steps to do the same thing. He walked down the steps to check the cellar door to make sure that it was locked. And another reason, Justice Albin, why this doesn't create a jury issue is because of the cellar standard. Here, this is a staircase that leads to a private cellar. There's no reasonable expectation that someone would be on that staircase.
But wasn't there evidence that the owner of the property knew about this block initiative?
Yes, he knew about the block initiative, but the owner specifically testified that he didn't know that police officers came on the property pursuant to this block initiative. He testified that when he saw the East Orange Police Department on Lenox Avenue implementing the block initiative, they stayed in their police cruisers.
Well, let's say he thought he saw someone in your client's abandoned building. Would you want him to remain in his police cruiser? Or would you expect him to check to make certain there were no intruders on your client's property?
Well, I would assume that my client would want the police to check to make sure. And that, again, that gets back to the cellar standard. That would be a situation, and there is case law where that is cellar, where there's an abandoned vehicle in a parking lot.
Are we in East Orange?
Yes.
Okay.
But the difference is, Your Honor,
there's a lot of crime in East Orange. And abandoned buildings are used for all sorts of illicit purposes. Would you agree with that?
At one time, I don't know that that's true now, but yes.
Wasn't the purpose of the Safe Block initiative to increase patrols that actually checked vacant buildings and abandoned buildings?
That was the plaintiff's testimony, yes. My client has to have the reasonable expectation that a police officer will be in his premises. He never saw a police officer in his premises. He only saw them in police cruisers. And on the one time that a police officer attempted to gain access to the building, the building superintendent said, hey, this building's all boarded up. We have guard dogs in here. There's no reason for you to be in here. And he told the owner that. So the owner's reasonable expectation is that there's no need for the police to be in here. And indeed, in this circumstance, I don't believe that the owner would have a reasonable expectation of a police presence because of the fact that the building is boarded up. He testified that there were signs around the building.
Is there any dispute about that conversation, whether or not that message was delivered? I don't want you police officers checking out my building to see whether or not anyone's broken into it.
The specific testimony is that the police officer was told the building's boarded up, it's fenced, there are guard dogs inside, there's no reason for you to be here.
Where were the signs posted?
Your Honor, I don't believe that that's in the testimony. There just was testimony that there was signage, stay out.
That's what I saw too.
The buildings were obviously under renovation. They were boarded up. They had construction fences around them. Mm-hmm. That's what lends to the idea or the notion that my client couldn't have had a reasonable expectation of someone going onto the premises. And that's why there is no fact issue here.
Can you clarify from the record what the officer did the prior time that he saw the steps, whether he walked down? Can you tell us where that is? I just looked at the road deposition in the area of page 126 to 129, and I see him talking about having seen it before, but not having walked down it before.
Honor, I'm sorry. I don't have that.
Perhaps you could give it to us later if you're able to.
Yes. The cellar decision is still the law of the state, and there is no reason to depart from the cellar standard of duty. In in the 22 years since the Sella decision.
This state for us what that the duty is under Sella.
Yes, the duty under Sella is if the official responder is in an area where the general public is anticipated to be, then the duty of care is the same as any member of the general public, an invitee type duty. However, where the police presence or the official responder cannot be reasonably expected to be in an area where the general public is not anticipated, then there is the limited duty of care, the sui generis licensee.
So that seems clear. Why isn't that, under the circumstances of this case, presenting a sufficient factual disagreement so that a jury decides the matter?
One, because my client, the evidence shows that my client had no reasonable expectation of Mr. Rowe's presence on that staircase. He didn't know that pursuant to this police initiative that officers actually went on the property. In fact, he had the opposite view, given the fact that the superintendent told him, hey, I had a police officer come to the property, and he tried to get in, and I told him, hey, there's no reason for you to be here, because we have the building boarded up, we have it fenced off, and we have guard dogs inside, and I'm here. So my client had no reasonable expectation that Mr. Rowe would go on his property, and specifically, no reasonable expectation that Officer Rowe would descend this private staircase down to a private door to determine whether or not it was locked. There's just no evidence of reasonable expectation on behalf of my client by which the case can go to a jury.
Is there anything you'd like to add, counsel?
I would just like to talk about the rationale for the Sella rule. The rationale is that where you have an unexpected police presence in an area of the property where that presence isn't anticipated or expected, that the official responder should have no reasonable expectation that the way has been made safe for them. Likewise, it's unfair to strap the property owner with having to make the way safe for unexpected presence on property in unexpected areas. And that would be the situation here, where my client has a boarded up building under construction, no reasonable expectation that the police would be there, and yet my client, if the police officer was considered to be an invitee, would be put to the onus of having to make the entire premises safe for that unexpected arrival and or activity. It's just unfair. When we talk about duty determinants, we talk about fairness to the parties. The rationale holds forth that it's both fair to the unexpected responding police officer to pigeonhole him as a sui generis licensee, because he has no reasonable expectation that the premises have been made safe for him, because he knows he's coming to the premises on an unannounced emergency basis or on an unannounced basis. So it's fair to both parties that there be a limited duty of care as set forth in Sella. I'd also just like to touch briefly on the other plain factual issue by which the plaintiff claims that this case should go to the jury, and that's whether or not the staircase in question was an open and obvious danger. The photographs themselves clearly show that it was. Plaintiff's own expert stated that there was widespread dilapidation on the staircase. And the plaintiff himself testified that he saw the staircase on his first appearance on the property. He saw it again. There were no changes. It was in the same condition. He had to realize that the staircase was dilapidated and dangerous.
He said there was no meaningful difference in the appearance from the second time to the first time. That doesn't necessarily mean that he thought it was terribly dangerous either time.
Well, the first time he was on the premises, I believe, was, he said, a few weeks before the date in question. There had been no work to the staircase. There's no reasonable chance that the staircase could have decayed to the extent or to the state that it was in on the date in question in a 3 or 4 week period of time. So it had to be in a very similar state of decay and dilapidation.
His testimony, I'm reading from page 128, was, question was, but I'm talking about before the cement cracked under your feet. Did the stairs have the same appearance that they did on the previous time that you saw? Answer, they can't have the same appearance because they broke under my feet when I went there. Okay, they broke, and that was the difference from the previous time that I checked the basement stairs. So he was contesting your question regarding the similarity and the condition of the stairs in his testimony.
Well, Your Honor, I took that to mean that the stair, he admitted that the stairway appeared in the same condition as it was on the previous occasion, and what he said is the only difference between the first and second occasions is that the stairway broke under my foot. And again, if there is a triable issue of fact, it is incumbent upon the plaintiff to come forward and establish that he did not know. And in response to the motion for summary judgment, there was no certification on behalf of the plaintiff saying, I was unaware of the condition of the staircase.
You don't think you can take that and turn it into a jury question from the fact that he's saying, they may have looked the same, but when I stepped on it, it cracked, and that contributed to my injury. Thus, I wasn't aware.
Your Honor, the reason why I believe you can't is because you have to look at both the actual condition of the staircase as depicted in the photograph and his testimony. You can't separate them.
When were the photos taken?
They were taken after the incident, Your Honor.
It's hard to know what they looked like before he stepped on them and they cracked from the photos.
Well, I don't recall exactly when the photographs were taken. They were taken by the plaintiff. But I do believe that they were taken shortly after the incident because the staircase was completely replaced a few months later.
Counsel, can you sum up your argument? Is there anything you'd like to add?
I would sum up by merely stating that the Sella standard is a reasonable standard. It takes into account fairness between the property possessor and the unannounced responder. It should stay as the law of the state. There's no rationale not to make it so. There have been no changes. There have been no societal changes in the 22 years since the Sella decision was passed. Indeed, police officers and firemen and official responders respond to emergencies and calls for help on property today the same way they did 22 years ago when Sella was enunciated.
Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Blanco, brief rebuttal.
Very brief. First, to be fair to my adversary, there are photographs on the record of both the condition before and after the repairs. But my main point is that we shouldn't be looking at photographs. It's not for us to be looking at photographs. It's not for judges to be looking at photographs. That's why we have juries. Now, turning to the Sella case very briefly, we could whether Sella was overruled essentially becomes a historical academic argument because we know Rosa was then overruled. But if we want to defend the Sella case, that's fine. This case is not so different than Sella. Sella went to a jury. Sella held that whether the property owner could anticipate someone like the plaintiff in this case coming upon the property is for the jury. That's what Sella held. Sella is a well-reasoned opinion, and I have no problems with it. Sella went to the jury. This case should go to the jury. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.